Amazon topping $2,000 a share on Thursday and staring down a $1 trillion valuation on the stock market following on the heels of Apple. Amazon shares have soared this year after crossing the $1,000 mark in late October. It's already doubled its share price since. And it got a boost this week after Morgan Stanley raised its price target to $2,500.
Billionaire inventor James Dyson unveiling plans to invest a further $160 million in his electric car project. That would see him take on the likes of Musk's pioneering Tesla. If given the green light, the plans will result in a test center, complete with an off-road course and high-speed track in southwest England, with the potential to create 2,000 jobs.
Britain says it will start work on its own satellite navigation system if the EU bars it from its Galileo project. The EU venture is designed to compete with the US's well-known Global Positioning System, or GPS. It's the technology that makes sat-nav work. British know-how had been instrumental in the European rival. But now Brexit could see it excluded from the project. On Wednesday, Britain said that it would leave the project unless it could continue to collaborate on an equal basis.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August 31st, the end of the week, heading into a big holiday weekend. Thanks for being here with us today on The Opening Bell, and thanks for being with us here for another business day getting underway. We've got a good show for you today. As usual, Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. We're going to go over some economic data from the week, talk a little bit about our portfolios, and maybe a little bit about Labor Day as well. And a little bit later on in the program, Brian Summers will be here from Skift.com. He's our regular Friday guest as well. And today, Brian and I are going to talk a little bit about what's going on at United Airlines and also some news about JetBlue that you probably already know about, but we'll dive into it a little bit further. Bag fees jumping on JetBlue, a tremendous amount this week. So that'll be in our second segment at about 5:40 this morning. First, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Asian shares fell Friday, say that five times real fast, following a report that the Trump administration could put tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese goods as early as next week. Markets in Asia are going to end in the red this morning. The Nikkei down just a fraction, the Hang Seng off almost a full percent, and the Shanghai off about a half a percent. And in Europe, markets are generally negative as well. The DAX off more than a percent, down 127 points. The CAC off more than a percent, down about 61 points. And the FTSE in London is off about a half a percent, down about 32 points. Markets in the United States, it looks like it's going to be a negative open for Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures off 51 points. NASDAQ futures are down about 10, so just a fraction, and the same story for the S&P. This morning, S&P futures off about 5 points. Oil is at $69.74, which is down about 51 cents. We're watching a couple of stories for you this morning. First, negotiators for the United States and Canada will meet again today to resume their urgent talks to revamp the North American Free Trade Agreement. The Canadian Foreign Minister met for less than 5 minutes yesterday evening with the trade representative from the United States. She tells reporters that she had a couple of things to say. The trade representatives met for a total of four times on Thursday, the last again being that very short meeting. On Monday, the United States and Mexico reached a deal to revamp regional pact that excludes Canada. It is unclear whether or not that agreement will be able to move forward without Canada on board. President Trump canceling pay raises in January for most civilian federal employees. He informed Congress yesterday that the budget constraints of the U.S. government are such that he cannot pay the 2.1% across-the-board pay raises for those workers. Most of those workers, by the way, are outside of Washington, D.C., in places all across the country. We begin front and center this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, good morning and happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy end of the month.
Yeah, right. It seems like summer went by really fast.
It always does, yeah. Because we spend so much time in the colder weather. It's beautiful in the summertime.
Yeah, although I'm looking forward a little bit to fall. I'm kind of a fall person, but...
My allergies are looking forward to fall.
Yeah, nice little frost. Well, Paul, how did the markets do this summer?
You know, they did actually very well this summer. This quarter is the S&P is up well over 5%. And a lot of that is due to the very good earnings picture, the still pretty good economic backdrop for the United States, and investors looking more to the United States than internationally as the trade talks continue to go on and we hear, like yesterday, the additional tariffs getting boosted. And so a lot of investors have pulled in their horns internationally and brought a lot of that money back to the United States. So it was a very good quarter for U.S. stocks.
Was there anything this past week in terms of economic data that you want to highlight?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've talked about it off and on over the course of really the last year or so. There's the difference between what we call the soft data, the surveys, consumer sentiment, consumer confidence, investor confidence, and the hard data, which is like the housing sector is not doing all that well. Some of the manufacturing sectors have kind of turned down a little bit. It's not enough to say, yes, we're in a recession, but there is a divergence between the two. And we tend to like to follow the hard data, the actual economic data, as opposed to the survey data. And so that's indicating to us that 4.1, 4.2 GDP number is probably going to be coming down in the third and fourth quarters, and we're not going to be at that 4% level permanently. We'll probably come back to the 2.5%, 3% level that we've been used to over the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, that was the revision in the GDP this week, I think, was probably the highlight on everybody's list this week. They revised it up to 4.2%.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high mark. It's a mark that has been hit a couple of times, more than a couple of times in the last 10 years, right?
Yeah, no, just a handful of times. But again, you know, it's the way we look at it, it's a little bit more of a one-off than it is a permanent new economic level of growth that we should be used to. We've seen one or two quarters in the past since the recession started. In 08, 09, where we've had those types of numbers due to, in this case, at least the tax cuts and some of the other factors. But that's it. You know, it's a one quarter and done.
The thing about the GDP is I was having this discussion yesterday with one of our listeners about it. GDP, these numbers, the revision happened in the quarterly GDP.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look at the one that we're watching is the annual GDP, right?
Right.
Which
right.
is about where?
We're actually right about 3% now. But again, that number will probably come down. And it's been, since the recession ended, it's been in the 2.5% to 3% range. And we think because of the makeup of the labor in the United States, productivity, and general growth of the population, that probably 2.5% is the speed limit for the U.S. economy at this point.
Personal income and outlays yesterday, consumer spending up 0.4%, but inflation is really ticking up.
It is, but the other part of it is income.
Income right.
is lagging that spending number. So as that happens, we see the savings rate come down a little bit. And so what happens for consumers is they increase their spending via credit card and via debt. And that has been going on for a little while. So although that's part of the reason why we're saying the GDP numbers should be coming down, because we're spending a little bit beyond our means at this point, and that's not something that's likely to persist. And it's a concern later on as the Fed starts to raise interest rates, we'll start to see credit card and some of those other loan rates pick up, and it won't be as easy to go out and borrow money.
Yeah. So with that in mind, if you have some of that credit card debt, start looking around for some lower interest rates ASAP.
Or better still, pay it off.
Yeah, there you go.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks snapped a 4-day winning streak to finish lower on Thursday on a report the president plans to press ahead with tariffs against $200 billion worth of Chinese products. The Dow Jones lost 137 points, closing just below 26,000. The NASDAQ was down 21 points. The S&P 500 lost 13. Meanwhile, the president has written to Congress saying the budget is too tight for the 2.1% raise promised to civilian workers in the federal government. He wants to cancel the pay hike, which was to take effect in January. Mortgage rates are on the rise. Freddie Mac says the average for a 30-year mortgage stands at 4.52%. That's still 0.3% below last year's rate. And Coca-Cola is buying British coffee shop chain Costa for $5.1 billion, diversifying further from its soft drink roots. It's the latest bet by a major consumer goods company on coffee. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
We're back here in The Opening Bell, 524. Paul Nolte with us, as he is every Friday, from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, earlier this week, we had an interesting conversation with the president of the Chicago Federation of Labor, talking about how wages, this back to the wages conversation being stagnant, about how the demise in unions nationally might be to blame for a little bit of this wage stagnation.
That is part of it, is the demise of labor unions. You look at labor as a percentage of the overall workforce, and it's been declining really for the last 20 to 30 years. It's been something that's been going on for quite some time. And you take a look at, too, what's called the underemployment of workers at this point. So they would like to have a better job. They were only getting this job or a part-time job. They'd like to have full-time. And both of those things, I think, are contributing factors to what we're seeing as far as underemployment, or certainly the stagnation in wages. And it's one of the problems I'm not sure we have a real good solution for at this point, but it's something that we're seeing evidence of. And the other part of it, too, was the ability for workers to move. There's a job in Tucson. It's too hard for me to move to Tucson. Mm-hmm. So it used to be, at least, worker flexibility and ability to move to different places was a lot easier. It's gotten a little more complicated.
It moved to Tucson scenario. It is difficult, perhaps, to buy housing nowadays.
Exactly. When we take a look, and this week pointed up that number, when you look at new home sales existing home purchases and new home construction and sales, those have all turned down because the growth rate in real estate, in housing prices, has been growing much faster than wage growth. So if you're looking to buy a house, you're getting priced out the longer that you wait, because your overall wage level is not keeping up with the level of housing. So we're seeing housing turn down, which is normal given that scenario. You can't support higher prices if you can't pay for it. So that is one of the things that gives us a little bit of a reason to pause. Again, going back to the data of hard data versus soft data, that's one of the hard data points that gives us a little bit of reason for concern.
Here at the end of the month, it's always a good time to look back on not just the summer, but the past month, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What worked, what didn't work in our portfolios, and what do we need to change?
Yeah, we've been a big fan of the international investing, and it's really been taking a backseat to everything else over the last 3 months this summer because of the trade talks. But the U.S. economy is still doing very well. The U.S. market is doing very well. So it has been very much a S&P 500, and even some of the small cap stocks have done very well. So it's still a very good market at this point, even with the trade talk discussion yesterday pushing the markets down here a little bit. The markets have been very resilient and really have shrugged off a lot of the trade talk. We're not seeing a recession in the future. So the equity markets are probably a better place to be at this point. And certainly right now, the U.S. markets, more so than international, we still think international is very good for the long term, 3 to 5 years. But you're going to suffer days like yesterday where the international markets are down 1.5% to 2%. So again, equities make a lot of sense here. We're not calling for a recession anytime soon, so it's not time yet to run for the hills.
Amazon stock at $2,000 a share, nearly a $1 trillion valuation. If you can afford it, that's probably a good stock to have in your portfolio, right?
One or two shares, it'll be good. Amazon continues to, it's the FANG stocks here, Apple over $1 trillion, Amazon knocking on the door, and we've got a few others that are getting close. But that part of the economy continues to do extremely well, and is beneficiary of what we're seeing in some of the other retail sectors. A lot of people gravitating toward online, doing much of their business there, and certainly Amazon is a big beneficiary as we see Sears, Toys R Us, and other many of the other retailers struggle.
I saw yesterday, speaking of Toys R Us, Walmart says it wants to become the new Toys R Us to beef up its toy section, I guess. That seems like a cool announcement right before Christmas, a couple of months before Christmas.
As a matter of fact, they have a play date scheduled for early September, so they're going to try to really beef that up. And yeah, they were looking to be in that sector. And Walmart actually is another stock that's done extremely well, has competed very well with Amazon. So it's not as though the brick and mortar retail stores are going to go away anytime soon. They just have to be a lot more creative in the way they're competing with a lot of the online companies. So Walmart, I think, is still a very, very good company and someone that should do very well still with Amazon.
Yeah, last earnings report, especially their e-commerce business, was up 40% in the quarter.
Yeah, so they have over the last 3 years, have spent a lot of money on their website and on the e-commerce part of their business, and recognize that Amazon's not going away. And that's where a lot of the consumers are going. So they have the ability to go online, make the purchases, pick up at the store afterwards, or even have it delivered.
Big weekend plans?
We got all kinds of things going on this weekend. So, yeah, I'm hoping to get to Tuesday so we can sit and relax back in the office. So, yeah, we're going to be running hither and yon a lot. My oldest is actually going to be in town for the first time in about a year and a half. Oh, nice. So that should be fun.
Yeah. What does September hold for the markets? Is September, what kind of historical month is it? Is it slow, fast?
You know, that I was hoping you wouldn't ask that question right because September's not a good, historically been a very good month. Actually, August and September are the two worst months of the year, and we've kind of sailed right through August. In September, historically, has been or is the worst month of the year. We're setting up for, I think, an okay September. There's certainly a lot of the discussion you'll read on online about you know, the imminent demise of the market, and September is where it's going to kick off. We could see a little bit of a correction, but it's not anything that we'd be worried about. So even if the markets pull back here 2-4% during the month of September, it's not enough, I don't think, should scare people out of the markets. But so September could be a little bit rough. We're going to be looking at the midterm elections, and that's going to get everybody a little bit concerned. But once we get into October and certainly early November, past the elections, the market should take off again.
Well, let's go have a long, nice, relaxing weekend. We can worry about that next week.
Exactly.
All right, Paul, thank you. How can people get a hold of you again?
They can email me at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
All right, we'll see you again next Friday.
We'll see you then.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. It's 5:31. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. New technology in Chicago wants to make sure you never get lost on Lower Wacker Drive again. A new partnership between the City of Chicago and tech company Spot Hero and Waze hopes to solve the problem of lost cell signals on Lower Wacker Drive with Waze beacons, Bluetooth-enabled devices that allow drivers access to GPS when they're using the Waze app. Chicago-based biotech company Happy Labs is the latest local startup to participate in Y Combinator, a selective accelerator program in Silicon Valley. Happy Labs makes a lab management and marketplace platform that reduces costs of medical supplies for scientists. And Maroon 5 announced it's going to sell a large batch of its gear on Reverb, a Chicago-based marketplace for buying and selling music equipment. It includes guitars and microphones used by frontman Adam Levine. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Lots of aviation and travel news this week. First, JetBlue says it's going to raise its, it already has raised its baggage fee a considerable amount. There is some news about WOW Airlines involving Chicago, but first let's begin with United Airlines. Some news there at United. Brian Summers is with us this morning, as he is every Friday. He's the aviation business editor for skiff.com and is with us via Skype from
Los Angeles. Brian, let's talk about United. You had a chance to speak with the president of the company about some of the moves they're making to increase capacity.
Yeah, I spoke with Scott Kirby, United's president, last week at length at a conference in Denver. He's a pretty interesting guy, very smart, and is trying to remake United in his own image. So a lot of folks think that United's problem after its merger was with Continental was about customer service. Like, of course, that was part of the problem. The airline didn't treat its customers very well, but it really wasn't the only problem. Some of us would argue that there was probably a bigger issue. And that was just a boneheaded, basic economic airline decisions about where United flew, how many times a day, and with what aircraft. Essentially, during a period of pretty big economic growth, maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago, prior management tried to shrink the airline to better profitability. And it just didn't work out very well. I don't think anybody needs a PhD in economics to figure that out. So during this point, Scott Kirby was actually the president of American Airlines, and he was kind of snickering at what was happening in Chicago. And lo and behold, he leaves American. He sort of gets pushed out over there. They name a new president. He comes to United, and his job is to fix United. And so, yes, customer service is an issue. But one of the things that Scott Kirby is doing is just right-sizing the airline. So in Chicago, you are seeing the airline announced lots of new flights with bigger airplanes, more times during the day, especially in big business markets. It's good for Chicago customers, and it also ensures that a lot more passengers are connecting in Chicago. And Scott Kirby's been at United for just about 2 years now, and Wall Street analysts are a lot more bullish on the stock than they were before. And again, it's not just about customer service. It's about growing the airline and strengthening it.
From an investor standpoint, they look at adding capacity, and generally that means in some places that ticket prices might go down. Obviously, investors are in this to make money. Was that the concern here, and have those concerns been alleviated at all?
Yeah, it is kind of funny. I think what you're referring to is that Scott Kirby came out with a big plan in January to increase United's capacity by 4 to 6% over a 3-year period. And for lack of a better term, I would say that Wall Street freaked out because, as you say, more capacity generally leads to lower fares. At the time, Scott Kirby came out and said, look, I mean, this sounds like more capacity to you, but it's really just United going back to what he called its natural share, the share that he should have had, that the airline should have had, had it not tried to shrink itself to profitability. And what are we, 9 months later now, it seems like the market has absorbed the new capacity, at least for this year. United stock is on a roll and things are going pretty well. So he told me that he wasn't necessarily surprised that Wall Street came around. He was surprised that Wall Street came around so quickly. But he also said that he has gone from goat to hero many times in his career.
Go to here. I like that. So what is the relationship between him and the CEO of the airline, Oscar Munoz?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of folks are talking about it in the airline industry. You know, we don't necessarily know. What we do know is that Oscar Munoz, yes, he is the CEO, but he does not have an airline background. And Scott Kirby has been in airlines for 30 or so years. He knows this stuff very well. And the understanding is that Scott is essentially running the airline and making the key decisions on a day-to-day basis. And Oscar is taking care of some of the other stuff, including, you know, employee relations and customer service. And these are big deals. I know that I've been downplaying a little bit in this chat. But Oscar is worried about the brand perception and things like that. But I'm not at the Willis Tower, so it's hard for me to know exactly.
I would imagine that American Airlines might be sad that they lost Mr. Kirby.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing. We don't know exactly what happened at American's Dallas-Fort Worth headquarters, but American had a lot of very talented senior people. There was an understanding that not all of them could stay. Somebody in senior management had to leave. It turned out to be Kirby, and that's just what happened.
Let's move on to some other news. I know you and I have had conversations before about Iceland and WOW Air.
A little bit of expansion for WOW out of O'Hare.
Yeah, you know, WOW Air and Iceland Air are both relatively new to Chicago. I think Iceland Air was there for a while, and then they came back recently. WOW Air has made a big deal of the fact that they're flying from Chicago to Delhi in India. Of course, you know that's not true. There's a very important part here. You're going to be making a stop in Iceland. But I think that, you know, Chicago-India fares are pretty high, and WOW Air wants to come in and stimulate the market a little bit. It makes sense. Now, one of the reasons that WOW Air probably has to do this is its older business model essentially had it, you would go from Chicago, you would stop in Iceland, and then you would go into Western Europe. But some legacy carriers, including United and American, have made that harder for WOW Air to do. Because American and United now have versions of their basic economy fares across the Atlantic. And so, yeah, you know, you could fly WOW Air and have a pretty poor experience from Chicago to Iceland to Barcelona, or you could just find a really good fare on American and fly nonstop on a Boeing 787 from Chicago to Barcelona and skip the stop. So this is a chance for WOW Air to try something else. American and United are probably going to completely ignore these fares, so they're not going to match WOW Air's fares from Chicago to Delhi.
Should we be concerned at all about Iceland Air and its ongoing struggles?
Yeah, I wrote about that this week, as you suggest. Look, Iceland is a very hot market. People really enjoy going there. So many tourists. I think what has happened here is a basic supply and demand imbalance. It was very hard to get to Iceland as recently as 5 years ago. But as the destination has become more popular, yes, more people have wanted to go, but airlines have been adding capacity, and I mean lots and lots and lots of capacity, so much so that Iceland Air said essentially at any fare, it's very hard to fill our seats. So, you know, supply and demand will probably realign, and the airline will probably be okay, but who knows for sure.
For folks who fly JetBlue, they probably already know this, found out the hard way, but bags, the bag fee has gone from $5 to $30. I know you've been writing about JetBlue. Are they at risk of losing some of their brand equity here?
Steve, this one really surprised me. I think that travelers have gotten pretty used to $25 per bag as a fee. It's expensive, but people are accustomed to it. I did not expect, especially with fuel prices where they are right now, which is higher than before, but not historically high, for any U.S. airline to come out and raise their bag fees. But as you say, JetBlue on Monday raised their bag fee $5 to $30. It's only been a few days, but what's interesting is that no other U.S. airlines have matched yet. I wish I had a crystal ball to know if United and American would match. I hate to say this on the radio because I could be wrong. My guess is that they won't, but who knows? Yeah, $30 just seems a lot to me.
Yeah, so what are they thinking, and what happens if the others don't follow? Is this going to be rolled back maybe on JetBlue?
You know, usually all airlines move in lockstep. So essentially under the old way of thinking, yes, you would probably expect JetBlue to roll back this increase. It does become a little bit complicated, right? Because American, United, and Delta all have basic economy fares. Those are a little bit punitive. Now, JetBlue does not have basic economy. So you could argue that by not having basic economy, that's a choice JetBlue made, they had to find their own other way to raise revenue. And so maybe they'll stick with no basic economy, but they'll have a higher bag fee. So even if the others don't match, they'll stay with $30. I just have no idea what's going to happen.
Is it possible that people could start pulling away from JetBlue if they keep it at 30?
It certainly is possible that people would pull away. I know that every airline in the world is tracking passenger bookings basically by the second. And I'm sure that if JetBlue sees real book away from this, they will lower their bag fee back to $25. But it's possible they're not seeing book away.
All right, Brian, good stuff. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is aviation business editor for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter. And make sure you follow Brian as well at Brian Summers, B-R-I-A-N-S-U-M-E-R-S.
We'll have Brian on every Friday here for our regular aviation and travel segment here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off 41 points heading to The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson this morning to talk a little bit more about agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, and it's been a busy week and a bump in the road or two for the Farm Progress Show with the weather on Tuesday, but Wednesday and Thursday turned out to be very good. And again, as we mentioned, they do not extend the show a day when they get a cancellation, because as soon as the show closed at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I think there were 20 or 30 semis ready to load up the exhibits and head for Grand Island, Nebraska, where the Husker Harvest Days annual show will get underway on the 11th of September. But we had a lot of good visits, and we're going to share a lot of them tomorrow on the Saturday morning show. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue and Assistant Secretary Bill Northey, former Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Iowa. Just a lot of people that were there that we had the chance to say hello to.
Very, very good. What was the overall buzz from the show?
Well, I would say that with the weather problem that we had on Tuesday, it got off to a slow start, but the thing that I saw and was pleased about is the people who had driven, you know, miles to the show, because it's a U.S. and an international show. And they all came back on Wednesday, and they were there. And talking to exhibitors, not as much pessimism, I guess, as you might have thought in light of the trade situation that we've been going through. And so I'd say the sense and the attitude was pretty positive. Now, we've got a lot going on this Labor Day weekend, if I can just mention a couple of things. One of the best county fairs in southern Wisconsin, close to the Chicago area, underway through Labor Day, and that's the Walworth County Fair at Elkhorn, Wisconsin, just north of the border. And they do a great job with that county fair. We've got the DuQuoin State Fair underway in DuQuoin, Illinois. That's our state's second county fair. And in addition to that, in Chicago right now, a lot of farm folks have gathered for the annual convention of GrowMark, the cooperative that serves farmers with marketing and with equipment and that sort of thing. So they'll be at the Hilton Hotel winding up their convention today. So we'll say welcome to those folks to Chicago.
All right, Orion, have a great Labor Day weekend.
You do, and we'll see you next week.
All right, thanks, Orion Samuelson. Make sure you listen to The Morning Show with Orion and Max Armstrong tomorrow morning, 5 to 6 a.m., right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Friday, August the 31st. On the calendar today, the Chicago PMI. We'll also get a look at consumer sentiment. Only one big earnings report on the calendar that we can see. Big Lots plans to release its quarterly earnings. The Eurozone unemployment data for July also released today. So a few things that could move the markets on this last day of the week, for really the last day of the month as well for the markets as we head into the Labor Day weekend.